WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. The Chicago area has been feeling the heat this week, with temperatures in the 90s and heat indices well above 100. It's meant an excessive heat warning in Cook County, poor air quality, and yes, a lot of sweating. In a moment, we'll hear about protections for people who work outside on days like these, specifically farm workers and day laborers. We also checked in with Illinois state climatologist Trent Ford to learn more about the heat.
Yeah, so the heat index is our sort of way of trying to represent the combined effect of heat and humidity. So we have heat, and everybody experiences what it feels like to be on in high temperatures, no matter how much humidity is in the air. Those can be dangerous. But what high humidity does is it makes it so that we're unable to cool ourselves as effectively because, you know, the way our bodies cool ourselves, we sweat, that sweat evaporates, but that high humidity makes it less effective. Yeah. And so we can get pretty dangerous conditions a lot quicker. So we combine that to the heat index.
Yes, sweltering out there, Trent. How common is this type of weather in the Chicago area?
You know, it's not super common to see these high temperatures and humidity values any time of the year, but especially this late in the year. I will say that, you know, the focus is always on the eye-popping high temperature values. But in fact, what the last couple of days, especially last night, really brought is record-breaking low temperatures. So O'Hare only got down to 79 last night, Midway 80, and both of those are the highest nighttime temperatures we've ever seen this late in the year. And I say ever. That goes back to the 1870s.
Wow.
So, okay. You know, again, we focus on those eye-popping high temperatures. But in fact, when we talk about human health, you know, it's really the health aspect is the cumulative exposure to hours of not just heat index values of 115, but just hours of heat index values over 85, over 90 degrees. Mm-hmm. And in fact, O'Hare had 13 hours above 90 degree heat index between 11 p.m. and midnight yesterday.
Right.
So the persistence of the heat, not just during the day, but night is what's really impressive.
It's hot round
here.
The clock. Yeah, for sure.
Right.
So we're under an excessive heat warning. What is the difference again between a heat warning and a heat watch?
Yeah, heat watch is the same kind of thresholds, heat index 100, 105, 110, depending on how many days in a row that's going to be. A heat watch is if there's a potential for that in the forecast. So when we look out a few days, the National Weather Service says, hey, it's going to be kind of hot. There's the potential of reaching these thresholds. We're going to put out a heat watch, just like a tornado watch is the potential for tornadic activity, but not imminent. A heat warning is when those conditions are imminent. We expect there to be these kind of conditions. In this case, we've had two consecutive days where the heat index has gotten over 105, likely over 110, so therefore we're in a heat warning it now.
And how long is this one projected to last?
So we'll see a cool down later tonight, tomorrow morning. In fact, tomorrow's forecasted high is only around 80 degrees for much of Chicago. And actually by Labor Day, it'll struggle to get above 70, which is going to feel amazing after this. So if folks can just hang on one more day, one more night, we can get some relief in here. And hopefully that relief will last at least, a number of days in the next week.
We're also seeing poor air quality, Trent. What are the details on that?
Yeah, this happens actually quite often. So ozone, which is really good up in the stratosphere where we want it because it blocks ultraviolet radiation, which can be really harmful for us. When it's down here where we're breathing the air at the surface, it can be really harmful for our respiratory health, and especially can exacerbate people who have asthma, COPD, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We see high ozone levels when we see these kind of heat conditions because it's high temperatures. Ozone is effectively negatively created with pollution down here at the surface. But at the same time, these kind of conditions that breed this really extreme heat also don't let that ozone, what we call, mix through the atmosphere. So it just kind of stays trapped by the surface. So very often when we see these very high temperatures in Chicago, we see those high ozone levels too. Yeah. So it's kind of a double whammy, especially on the most vulnerable folks with pre-existing health conditions.
Yeah, speaking of the most vulnerable folks, I mean, this weather, it's the most dangerous, right? Excessive heat. Now, talk about who it affects, Trent, and the warning signs that folks should look out for.
Yeah, so first and foremost, elderly, and just across the board, elderly and those who are very young are affected just kind of broadly the most by extreme heat. Those are exacerbated by humidity and the poor air quality. But those with pre-existing health conditions, things like respiratory issues, cardiovascular issues, diabetes, I mentioned asthma, COPD, those kind of things. And again, heat, we focus on the heat-related deaths, but we can have many larger impacts that don't necessarily lead to fatality. So things that people need to look out for: dizziness, headaches, shortness of breath, right? These are things that can reflect heat-induced stress that, if not taken seriously, can lead to much worse problems. Mm-hmm. So it's today, like I mentioned, we're getting a break tomorrow and in subsequent days. So today, if folks can just take a rest, I just saw I'm coaching 6-year-old soccer this year, and our games are canceled tonight, as they should be. Practices for outdoor sports really should be canceled. Outdoor workers, farm workers, if you can take a day off, this is the day to take off. And I'm talking to supervisors just as much as the workers themselves. Just taking those breaks, precautions. If you have to be out there, watch for those symptoms, stay hydrated, and take breaks in the shade as much as possible.
Yeah. And before I let you go, Trent, I mean, just tie the knot for us here. The changing climate that we're seeing, how does that impact the frequency of excessive heat?
And I just want to make one important point here that, again, we focus so much on those high temperatures, but study after study shows it's the cumulative effect of very hot days and very warm nights that is really affecting human health. And when we look at climate change is disproportionately increasing those nighttime temperatures, those overnight temperatures, especially in our urban areas like Chicago. So when we think about our response to mitigate those impacts of extreme heat, things like opening cooling centers, opening shelters, running the CTA buses as mobile cooling centers, having those open at night is increasingly important because of those overnight temperatures increasing because of climate change. So it's not just that, you know, we need to be expecting more heat, it's how we're responding to that heat and the difference between daytime and nighttime heat that's really important.
Trent Ford is Illinois State climatologist. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Sasha.
Let's turn now to hear from organizations who help people who work outside, specifically farm workers and day laborers. Gabby Gracia is deputy director of the Great Lakes Center for Farm Worker Health and Well-being at the UIC School of Public Health. Welcome to the show, Gabby.
Hi, Sasha. Thank you for having me.
And Miguel Alvelo Rivera is the executive director of Latino Union, which represents day laborers and domestic workers. Welcome, Miguel.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to get a sense of scale, Miguel. How many day laborers do you estimate are looking for work in Chicago on a given day?
It could be anywhere from hundreds to thousands. It really depends. In recent months, we have seen an exponential increase in the number of folks that are seeking work at corner hiring sites throughout the Chicago area.
Wow. Describe the corners that you mentioned there, where they are looking for work and the kinds of jobs that they're usually hired to do.
So folks go to where employers will hire them. Mm-hmm. And this usually tends to be outside of places like hardware stores, such as Home Depot, or near gas stations. Some of the older corner hiring sites are near some major intersections at gas stations. And they put themselves to be available to be hired for whatever type of job they're offered. So they're multifaceted individuals. They will do construction work. They will paint. They'll do landscaping. Essentially, anything that's within their capabilities and that is offered at the right, pay.
And something that's probably already going to make them sweat. But how do they cope on a day like today? What's it like for them out there?
Yeah, it's a real challenge. And I think I want to highlight part of what Trent just mentioned, which is traditionally how we respond to high heat and the issues that we face outside are focused on the individual. And we often don't talk about how we ensure that there are structural assurances to make sure that folks can be safe when they're out working. Right now, there is a lack of legislation for protections for outdoor workers. The positive thing is it's already in the works.
Yeah.
So there is an ordinance that's being pushed through the city, hopefully this year, via Alderman Maria Haddon, that we are supporting and have been collaborating on.
That's wonderful. We'll dig more into that legislation in just a moment. I want to bring you in here, Gabby. A national census, it found that there are 52,000 farm workers in Illinois working in greenhouses, fields, and with livestock. There are year-round workers as well as temporary workers who are here on a seasonal basis with H-2A visas. There are different conditions for each. What's your team finding?
We are working with both of these groups. In Illinois, there are more settled workers. About 80% of that 52,000 are settled workers. The remaining are H-2A workers. We are finding working with H-2A workers that that as a workforce, they are on a guest program. They are brought over for a short period of time. Their employer is responsible for providing them with housing, with transportation, access to food or meals throughout their stay here. In our work that we're finding, in the research we're doing, we're finding that for the most part, workers are given those provisions. Mm-hmm. When they're working outside, they're given access to water, they're given breaks, and they're given protective equipment to wear.
And that's what their employers are supposed to do, especially Correct. On these excessively hot days.
Yeah, and I do want to circle back to what Miguel was saying. Also, this workforce at the same time, though, is... You know, they're paid to work. If there's a day where they cannot work, they will not get paid for that work. So even with these provisions in place, the way the work is structured, they're incentivized yeah. to take these risks while they're working, to work harder, to not take breaks, to not drink water, to not use the bathroom, because mm-hmm. all of that impacts their productivity. And, you know, at the end of the day, they're a workforce that's here temporarily, legally, but temporarily, and they want to be brought back the following year.
So, right, yeah. So, you know, we know that this excessive heat's impacted by climate change. Many farm workers that your team interacts with, Gabby, they report that they are farmers back in their home countries and climate change is impacting their ability to farm there, too. What can you share?
Yeah, we've heard this story a few times now, especially this summer. Farm workers who have farmland back home, small plots or larger plots, and the climate change is making that work unsustainable for them. So they're no longer able to carry out that work at home. They're a skilled labor force. So they come here via the H-2A program, and they are able to do that work. However, they are a skilled labor force, but they really do not have a lot of protections as other skilled laborers do in this country.
Mm. Miguel, what can you add to that? I'm sure you're hearing from day laborers about not only how the heat is impacting them, but, you know, what Gabby was talking about, those who feel like they have to work through the heat.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. So I want to echo what Gabby just mentioned, which is the displacement of populations from other countries, leading them to Chicago, is also part of the reason as to why we're seeing an increase in the number of people seeking work at corner hiring sites. So if you cannot find a job via any other means, usually the job that people go look for is whatever is available at the corner. Mm. it's very similar, right? Day laborers will expose themselves to any condition because every day they have to make a decision between being able to eat that day, mm-hmm. For others being able to either like pay for whatever rent they're paying for, take care of their family. So it becomes a question of being able to survive or not. Mm-hmm. So they're not afforded the type of securities that other workers throughout the country are commonly afforded,
right.
Which is mostly what right now we would all need, which is a break.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. Yeah. Tell us more, Gabby, about how the Great Lakes Center does outreach. Because I hear you're in the beginning stages of developing a structure to sort of alert farm workers about high temperatures?
Yeah, so we have an amazing director of our outreach, Maggie Acosta. She is really kind of spearheading several projects for us. She's really the one who's out in the field with our students. I am as well, but she's really out there. She has a pilot project using WhatsApp as a platform to connect with the farm workers, especially the H2A workers. We're finding use that to keep in touch with their families, mm-hmm. with their friends, and really kind of developing that out as a communication forum for the center and also a way to kind of give out alerts about heat. So today we would, once it's up and running, yeah. we would get something out about heat.
Alert.
Tornadoes.
Right.
Like anything that kind of directly impacts farm workers, but we're in the process now of launching that project.
You've opened the doors of Latino Union, Miguel, for day laborers to actually come inside and get some relief in air conditioning.
Yeah, we're very lucky. We have a storefront in the neighborhood that we're located, which is Albany Park. We're there, right? We're open to the public 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. It is the least that we can do. I will say we also are the only organization that does direct outreach to day laborers in the city of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And the way that we support folks in there is making sure that they know the basics of how to take care of themselves. Because there is this overarching culture of, like, you just have to get through it. You just have to rough it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're not going to get paid. So we have a day labor organizer. He's a former day laborer himself, who comes in the morning, early in the morning. Today he's coming out with some ice water. Usually he comes out with coffee, but I was like, you know, it might be a good
not
day to
today.
Switch it up. and talking to folks about, you know, what are some precautions that they should be taking, and also getting them some of those materials, right? Sometimes we'll notice that people don't even have basic safety equipment, such as gloves, to be able to do the work that they do.
Right.
Because it really should be the employer that provides this to them, but a lot of employers don't.
Yeah. Well, back to legislation. Last month, Gabby, the Department of Labor released a proposed rule. If finalized, it would protect millions of workers across the country from the health risks that we've been talking about that are associated with extreme heat. Can you tell us briefly more of how it would work?
Yeah, so this is an OSHA national heat standard. It would impact both indoor and outdoor workers for employers with 10 or more employees. So that's like a caveat right there. Mm-hmm. Basically, there are two measures that would be put in place. If it's above 80 degrees Fahrenheit, the employer would be responsible for monitoring the workers, for making sure that they have access to water, extra breaks. And if it's 90 degrees or higher, then there are extra provisions in place as well.
I see.
Part of this would also mean that the workers would have access to shaded rest areas. So for farm workers, that's huge because so many farm workers are working outside, no shade, 10 hours a day.
I'm curious why they limit the number of employees.
Yeah, that's something we've seen a lot of a discrepancy as well when we've been meeting with farm workers in terms of, Miguel mentioned PPE, just like.
Right. And how long would this take, Miguel?
To get
this OSHA policy.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It could be years. It could be years, right? Because they're in the comment phase. It's going to get challenged. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a positive advancement, but this is legislation that we need 5 years ago.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned earlier Latino Union is pushing for a citywide ordinance that would actually create heat regulations for workers. What else can you share?
So it's very similar in tone to what Gabby just presented. These are more heat protections for outdoor workers. So above a certain threshold, right, we have the 80-degree threshold. We follow the same guidelines. But above 92.5, which is kind of the threshold where the extreme heat is started to be counted, the legislation points to providing things like ice water, making sure that there are scheduled times available for rest, mm-hmm. and that rest is paid, other forms of protection, which would make sure that the employer is aware, mm-hmm. of how the workers are, their right. well-being, and that the employees themselves know how to take care of themselves.
Exactly. Hold everyone accountable and get protection at the end of the day. Now, we've been speaking about how people who work outside, like farm workers and day laborers, are handling today's excessive heat warning. Our guests, Gabby Gracia from the Great Lakes Center for Farm Worker Health and Well-Being, and Miguel Alvelo Rivera from Latino Union. Thank you both so much.
Thank you so much.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic and mixed by Ari Mejia. It was edited by Meha Ahmed. You can support the work we do on Reset by liking and subscribing to our podcast. We drop new episodes every weekday, with a special one on Saturdays. You can also sign up for our newsletter. Head to wbez.org/resetnews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.